Chapter 32
Continued.
One night, midway through our short-lived relationship, we sat on a darkened corner of the beach, far enough away from the house to escape the notice of diehard revelers, the Zack Pack, which surely would have invested the energy to find their master had they known where to look. It was late. The party had dwindled. The band had disbanded and gone home. The alternating roar and hiss of the breakers washed away the sporadic shrieks and laughter coming from the house. Zack and I were rarely together during the parties. I spent time with my friends, and Zack played his particular version of host. A surfing lesson here, a bongo solo there, pouring drinks, rolling joints, stoking the volleyball rivalries, and tossing people into the ocean. But as each party waned, so did Zack, and he often sought me out and secreted me away to the farthest, darkest reaches of the beachfront that adjoined his property. On this particular night, the moon was a thin, bone-white scythe in the sky, and a warm breeze chased the sand into the water around our feet. He was thoroughly under the influence of something. I had no idea what, but it had waterlogged his mood and left him brooding.
"I hate this,"
he said, burying his foot. "Really?" I asked. "I like the dark." He looked at me like I was stupid, so I reacted. "What? Well, then let's just go back. You know they're looking for you. I don't care as long as the music is done. God, they sucked. Who vets these groups anyway?" I started to rise, but he caught my wrist and pulled me back onto the sand.
"Not this, Tilly."
He spread his arms to encompass the entire swath of planet beneath us.
"I mean, this."
"What? California?"
"No,"
he said.
"The life, you know."
Again, with a gesture.
"This."
Odd thing for America's number one celebrity, Zack.
"I'm not America's number one celebrity."
"Close enough. Most people would kill," he interrupted me.
"Most people. Yes. The do-it-yourself lobotomy is all the rage these days. God save us from what most people would kill for."
"I don't understand."
"Well, neither do I. This is not what I'm supposed to be, but it's what I am."
"What are you supposed to be?" I asked.
"I don't know. Not this."
"This is a bad trip, isn't it? Tiki talked you into mixing again. Whatever it is, Zack, they shouldn't go into your body at the same time. Shit like that will kill you."
"Settle down. It's just weed."
"Okay, then I really don't understand you tonight." He buried his other foot up to his ankle. Seawater slid up the beach with a hiss, pooling in a depression at our feet. Zack reached up to cup it in his hands. He ladled it methodically over one knee, and then the other.
"I'm trapped," he said.
"Trapped how?"
"I can't escape any of this."
"You want to?"
"Yes. Like my fucking life depends on it."
"Why?"
"Because, I don't know. Because this is not, I don't know, Tilly."
We sat for a while listening in the dark to the ocean breathing. I understood only enough to keep quiet.
"When I was a kid back in New York, I knew this rabbi. Rabbi Feldman. Worst breath you've ever experienced in another human, guaranteed. Looked like a fish with these big bulging eyes and this really pinched nose and cheeks that seemed to just kind of cave into his mouth, which itself was just a blood red hole in a tangle of black hair. Glasses like yellowed Coke bottles."
"Lovely," I said.
"Mom and I called him Rabbi Fish behind his back. Anyway, Rabbi Fish told me once that the most important identity I could ever have was to be a Jew. I'm 9 when he says this to me. 9. We're sitting at my dining room table in the middle of the afternoon, just the two of us. My father left us there together, saying he needed to step out to buy cigarettes, even though there was a new pack right there in the kitchen.
Speaking of which," I held out my hand, wanting.
"Sorry,"
he said.
"They're back at the house. I thought you quit."
"I did. But it doesn't mean anything if they're not available."
"Christ, Tilly."
"Sorry. Go ahead."
"So, we're sitting there at the table, just the two of us. And Rabbi Fish talked away at me, and I mostly listened to the big clock in the corner and watched the red hole in the hair open and close and his cheeks puff in and out and his eyes shifting and bulging inside the Coke bottle glasses. And then he comes out with this statement. He said, 'Zell, the most important identity you will ever have in your whole life is to be a Jew.' And the way he said it was like a 2x4 across the temple. Nothing else really mattered to him. The worst Jew was better than the best Gentile."
"I guess I never really think of you as Jewish," I said.
"Neither do I. And I certainly didn't then. But to Rabbi Fish, that was the only thing about me of any importance."
"Okay. So..."
"So I asked him why, right? And he said, because the Jews were chosen by God. To be Jewish was to be chosen. I asked him what would happen if I did not really want to be a Jew. And he told me that what I wanted was completely beside the point, since it was not possible for me to be anything other than a Jew."
"And this is what's bothering you at age 27? Rabbi Fish?
29.
Really?
Really. Thought you were robbing the cradle. I am a grown man.
Robbing the cradle? You really don't know anything about me, do you?
I know you're beautiful, Tilly. Smart. I know you're different from the others.
Others? I thought you were a virgin. I'm scandalized. Whatever would Rabbi Fish have to say?
That I was still chosen by God. That it wasn't possible for me to fuck my way out of my religion. He said I could be a bad Jew, and that there were plenty of bad Jews. But that one way or the other, I would always be a Jew because my identity was not a choice. You know, like what kind of shoes to buy or something. His big deal was that a core identity was something that you simply were, and that was it. Like the color of your skin. There was no escaping a core identity. He said that I was a Jew like my father and his father before him, and that I would always be a Jew, and so I may as well be a good Jew, a practicing Jew, who went to temple, and who studied the Torah and the Talmud even if my parents divorced, and even if my father only had partial custody, and even if my mother, who was a neglectful Jew, was not likely to immerse me in my father's heritage. It was such a jarring idea to me. An identity like the color of my skin. I think he meant it to be a comfort. You know, no matter how far I strayed, my identity would never forsake me. I could kill 100 people in cold blood, and I would still be a Jew chosen by God. My parents could divorce, and they could hate each other, and they could move to opposite corners of the earth, and I would still be a Jew chosen by God.
I shrugged at him. I guess I could see a certain comfort.
Not me, he said. Man. Not me. The very idea that I was stuck with an identity I did not choose and that I did not want was kind of, you know, terrifying. I didn't care that God chose it. I, Zell, did not choose it. That was the point. And then he started making plans for my bar mitzvah, which was still 4 fucking years off into the future. And he did a good 20 minutes on the whole religious significance of the bar mitzvah.
What'd you do?
Got the hell out of New York is what I did. My mother was so freaked out that my father might pack me off to Israel without telling anyone, that she was happy to nominate my Aunt Lucy as a guardian.
Why not just stay with your mom?
She'd hooked up with this fat cat who didn't have any use for a kid.
I reached for him. That's so sad.
It is what it is. I've probably talked to her 3 times in 15 years. I think they live in France. I don't think she ever wanted a kid. It was enough for her that my dad didn't have control. Anyway, Aunt Lucy stepped up and I told the judge that I wanted to live in California more than anything in the world. Although, for me, it was the only way to keep from looking and smelling like Rabbi Fish when I grew up. Dad had pegged the judge as an anti-Semite from the start. It didn't go so well for Dad.
But it went well for you. I mean, didn't it?
Did it?
He asked. Zach, you're a star with more money than God. What the fuck do you want?
To choose,
he said. You didn't choose this?
No.
Then who did?
God, I suppose. Or no one, I don't know. Not me, anyway.
Yes, you did.
No,
he said, shaking his head slowly.
I chose not to be a Jew, and I ended up in Santa Monica. I had no idea who I was or what I wanted out of the world. I had no identity at all. Nothing that was intrinsically, irrevocably, indisputably me, you know? You say you like the dark, but you don't even know darkness, Tilly. There were no stars in that sky and no light on that horizon. I was fucking lost. Totally lost.
Zach scooped dry sand from behind us and piled it up into a small hill over our feet. A tongue of dark water took it all away again in a single lap, pulling at our ankles as it went, as if to drag us into the sea. People were calling out Zach's name down the beach in front of the house. A woman screamed in laughter, and someone yelled at her.
I was so lonely, and I didn't know anyone out here, and none of the kids liked me. I was scrawny with a weird Jewy look to me, and I got the shit kicked out of me every other day. It got so bad that one day I walked into a synagogue and stayed for 4 hours just to avoid going to school. The rabbi there felt sorry for me and wrote me a note that I used over and over for the rest of the school year.
No way, I said.
Worked every time.
What kind of school would let a kid with...
Hey, giving a California teacher a note from a rabbi is like a girl giving her father an excuse that uses the words period or tampon. I just don't want to know.
Sure never worked with my dad, I said ruefully. Of course, he took a perverse pride in not being affected by anything, so what can I say?
Well, the California rabbis know how to push the buttons of the public school system. At least, that rabbi did. He wasn't like Rabbi Fish at all. We kind of talked about all the same stuff, but he was very laid back about all of it. It was the best I had felt since leaving New York. For those 4 hours, I was a Jew, you know? A bad Jew, a fucked up Jew, but a Jew. And things made a kind of sense.
Identity crisis solved, I said.
Not even close. The more sense it made, the more it scared me.
Why?
Because I knew I was only pretending. I was acting for his sake and mine. I was playing a part just so I could find myself on a map or recognize myself in a mirror. As soon as I left that synagogue, the feeling was gone, and I knew I would never go back. I realized that even my supposedly indelible Jewishness had never really been a part of me, and that Rabbi Fish had been full of shit. It hit me just how much I had been counting on, at least that, to sustain me. The thought that at least I was a Jew who did not want to be a Jew, chosen by God. But that was all shit. I was empty. I was nothing.
Zach waited for the water to slip back down the beach, and then excavated a semicircular trench in front of us that the ocean would never respect. He piled the dark, cool tailings over my ankles.
And then, one day, as I was sitting on a pile of sand just like this one, staring out over the same ocean, there appeared Vance Cassidy, dripping wet with a surfboard under his arm, preaching the gospel of the Pacific Ocean, and reciting from the great apostles of American cinema. Knew every line of Cool Hand Luke backward and forward.
"The mentor appears," I said.
"No.
The identity appears. Being no one myself, I became him. I became Vance. I am not the product of a choice, Tilly. All nature abhors a vacuum. Vance and I went swimming, and Zell Whippo simply drowned in his own nothingness. Zach West emerged, toweled off, and never questioned who he was in the world. Ever." "And now?"
"I'm..."
He looked around him, gesturing hopelessly.
"Fucking marooned on an incredibly small island where my only worth is in hosting a party that never stops and pretending for the amusement of adolescence. If the party ever stops, or if the teenagers get distracted, then the island sinks into the sea, and there is darkness once again."
"Jeez Louise, Zach. What has gotten into you?" "You're drunk."
"I'm not drunk. I'm a little high. I'm not drunk."
"Like hell. Pot doesn't do this to you. You're on something."
"I'm not drunk."
"So, leave the damn island. Do whatever you want to do. Be whoever you want to be. What's stopping you?"
"I've tried,"
he said.
"It's like trying to escape the gravity of the earth. It's like Michael Corleone trying to quit the business. This is who I am now. It doesn't matter if I hate it or how bad I want out. This is who I am. I'm not a Jew. I'm a fabrication meant to fill an empty space. I'm this. Whatever in the hell this is."
"What does your dad think about it? Do you talk?"
"He came out here. It's already been 10 years now. I can't even believe that. He wanted to take me back."
"Long Island?"
"Israel. He said I was killing him. He felt betrayed that I had done my mother's bidding. I refused. He started calling me Ifa, which is Yiddish for abomination. I was the unclean thing in the eyes of God.
A bit harsh, if you ask me.
You could say that. My Aunt Lucy stood him down and sent him packing. He went back to New York, after making it clear what he thought of me.
And he lives in Israel? Among the chosen?
No.
Zach rammed the heel of his foot into the beach, forcing a flange of water to fold in around it and backfill the gouge in the sand. So? I asked after too long.
He was chosen by God to step off the Hudson Bay Bridge.
Jesus.
Yahweh,
he said. It wasn't your fault. You know that, right?
Been a lot of water under that bridge. It is what it is. I don't think about it.
It was 15 minutes before either of us said anything. I watched him throw sand at the ocean as he excavated a circular trench around his body. It was as if he had forgotten I was there. I've never seen this side of you, I said finally. And I hadn't. He looked up, almost surprised, and then knocked the sand off his hands, letting it rain over his knees.
Because you don't really know me, Tilly. And because there is no me to know.
This is getting just a little silly and morose.
Yeah?
Yeah. I leaned over and kissed him. I and about 100 million other women and gay men around the globe think you're the hottest thing since the do-it-yourself orgasm.
What about the straight men?
They all secretly want to be you.
Poor saps. What about your dad?
My dad? For about the first time ever in my life, I think he approves.
No shit.
He laughed in a kind of soft astonishment.
I make the grade with the old man.
Let's put it this way, I said. My dad and I don't talk, so everything I know I get from my mom. And she says that whenever your name comes up, he tends to stay in the room.
That's a good sign.
Trust me. She said that once or twice, he has even nodded with approval. Her interpretation, so it's instantly suspect. I couldn't care less, you understand.
Yeah, I got that. Not a good track record with parental approval.
I stuck out my hand. Wandering Jew? Meet fucked up ingrate slut bunny.
Ouch,
he said, shaking my hand and wincing.
That bad?
That bad. I'd take Rabbi Fish any day.
Oh, fuck you.
Zach splashed me with water from his moat. Okay. Maybe not Rabbi Fish.
When was the last time you were home?
Long time.
Michigan, right?
Ohio. All hell has been breaking loose over there. Really weird. My dad kind of disappeared for a while, and my older brother was in some legal trouble, and Mom got all obsessed with anti-war politics. I barely recognize them as my family.
Go back for a visit. Patch things up.
In the middle of a spin cycle?
Sure,
he said. No thanks.
So, call your dad on the phone. At least you've got one.
Fuck him, I said with more force than I had intended. I don't care what he thinks about me. And I don't care to let him run me over with his judgments about my life. Okay, why are you laughing?
Me?
Zach looked away, turning into the darkness, and then back again with a comically grave expression.
I mean, me?
Yes. You, Mr. Woe is me, self-loathing Jew, whiny, mega-rich action god who doesn't think that's quite enough identity. You. I swung myself over his legs, my back to the sea, unable to keep from smiling. Why the fuck are you laughing? Is something funny?
I think you just contradicted yourself,
he said. I did not. How?
How can he run over you with his judgments if you don't care what he thinks?
I looked at him and saw how the light from a sliver of moon filled his eyes like the sea filled sockets in the sand. Water washed in around us, seeping down and away in wet fingers. He was right, of course. But I was young, and far too good at deflection in those days to be bullied by the truth of things. You a shrink now? I asked, slipping my blouse over my head and tossing it into the sand.
Nope.
I pushed him back onto the beach and went to work on his trunks. Then you know what you can do with your opinions. They found us before we were finished. Six of the Zack Pack regulars, the ones who always seemed to refuse to go home, insisted that the party was just getting started if Zack would only attend to his hosting responsibilities. Company, I said, and I felt Zack sigh heavily beneath me. I confess to not liking any of them very much. Their affection for me was nothing beyond the tolerance one affords an interloper protected from on high. None of us tried very hard. That we had been discovered in flagrante delicto was of little consequence to the Zack Pack regulars, who were far too drunk to care and far too determined to be dissuaded by manners. Much to the delight of his entourage, Zack showed no modesty in the act of gathering my clothing. As I dressed, he led them away into the darkness, swinging his trunks on a finger. The sounds of a scuffle and shouting rose above the breakers, and I could tell that some contingent of the search party was attempting to drag someone among the remainder down the beach and into the surf. I sat in the sand, listening to Zack's voice above the others, raucous and indomitable and full of bravado, growing fainter and fainter as the scythe of bone in the sky slit the darkness and stars spilled out over the ocean. Until at last, his voice was gone entirely, leaving only the dark water, the bright fishes of youth, and the undertow of inevitability.